Despite all the technological innovations we are experiencing in the practice of medicine, it still remains paramount to protect the privacy of our patients. From the original Oath of Hippocrates to the Indian traditional medical practice of Charakra Samhita and the Jewish Oath of Asaph, the concept of professional secrecy, of protecting the information entrusted to physicians by patients, pervades timeless and cross-cultural codes of medical ethics. With the recent news regarding the computer hacking of Sony Corporation and its consequences on business in America, it is not surprising that many are worried about the safety and security of privileged patient information that is stored digitally. In this dialogue, Dr. Matthew Roberson and Dr. Craig Burkhart help us understand the digital safeguards for patient information.
Hello, welcome to Dialogues in Dermatology. Today's discussion is legal aspects of mobile apps. I'm speaking with Mr. Matthew Roberson at Adams, Hendon, Carson, Crow & Sanger in Western North Carolina. He specializes in civil and business litigation. I am Craig Burkhart, a pediatric dermatologist at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill and a technology enthusiast. Thank you, Dr. Roberson, for coming.
Thank you for having me.
So I have several questions for you. I'm just going to go right into it. What are common mistakes physicians make with mobile technology?
So the most common mistake made by physicians as well as the public alike is that they fail to password protect their mobile phone, which is the initial security device when you turn that phone on, whether it be a four-digit code or a strong password. That a lot of times they don't even have that. Certainly a recommendation of mine has always been to have as strong a password as possible, but as well with physicians, it's the lack of encryption on their phone. And that's particularly important because of the sensitive information that a physician may have on the telephone or tablet device for that matter. And I would say that the one thing that is of concern and is becoming a concern is the sharing of information on a device that a physician uses for their personal purposes. So when they download a mobile application, for instance, a lot of times that mobile application will ask for your contacts or your calendar to be able to effectively integrate that application into the aspects of your life. The problem that poses is that sometimes physicians may have patient contact information in their contacts, as well as perhaps surgery schedules or other medical appointments in there that then are shared with the mobile application company, wherever their server may be. So those are by far the most common problems posed by the mobile technology as well as mobile applications.
Thank you. And this relates to HIPAA and high tech too, doesn't it? Are you able to explain how this security of devices relates to those two bills or acts? I'm not sure how to explain what they are.
Sure. So let's start back with the High Tech Act. The High Tech Act was adopted in 2009, buried in the 2009 stimulus bill. High tech is really nothing new. It just really imposes more, puts more teeth to HIPAA. That's the best way to put it. So now when there is a security breach, because you know HIPAA has both a privacy rule and a security rule, if someone's protected health information is breached, then there is now more enforcement to that. In this case, the Office of Civil Rights will investigate because you have to make it known when there's a breach. You have to provide individual notice. In some circumstances, if it's a breach of more than 500 individuals, you have to notify the media. And so if a mobile device, which commonly the most common aspect is theft in the breaches of security, you have to notify the Department of Health and Human Services. That will trigger an investigation and potential fines for that breach. But it also can trigger an audit, which then they will examine all of your patient records, all of the aspects of your security in your office. That's a drag on time, and it certainly could lead to stiffer penalties.
Sure. Now, I was wondering, you were talking about applications that have calendars and surgery schedules, that sort of thing, but what about emails and texts? Are those sort of things that physicians should protect as well?
They should. One of the common questions that I've received is email and text. Text is becoming more and more an easy means of communication because you can text, it doesn't cause the phone to ring. You can easily read it and respond to it very quickly, both communication among doctors with email, but also communication with patients. And yes, it applies. It's important to remember it has the email and text would have to involve protected health information. We don't even get to that issue if it doesn't contain it. But a lot of times it does. It may have a patient name, a patient phone number. And if that poses a risk of financial or reputational harm, not that it would actually cause harm, but just the risk, then that's a potential breach of the HIPAA privacy rule. So you have to keep that in mind. And there are mechanisms now with this new law. Cottage industry is going to spring up and has sprung up, providing physicians with technology to encrypt emails as they are sent and received into the physician, as well as texts, maybe perhaps among doctors. So it's important to look at that so that you can make sure you're compliant. And the benefit that the law provides is a safe harbor. The Department of Health and Human Services has said encryption that is compliant with the, I call it NIST, N-I-S-T, the National Institute of Security and Technology, something to that effect. But if you have a provider that complies with those provisions, then you know, if a breach happens, you can claim the safe harbor.
And how much is this penalty if you're caught with PHI and someone steals your phone?
Sure. So the penalty will vary. It depends, one, on the extent of the breach, certainly, and the amount of information or the number of patients and the ability, in part, a number of factors. Was the device recovered or was the information recovered? Was it, in fact, can you determine if, in fact, it was compromised, a third party actually read it? And so those penalties really can range from in the four figures and five figures. If it's very extensive, you're looking at a six-figure penalty. So it's something to be concerned about, because now the Office of Civil Rights, in the past, it was just sort of complaint-driven and compliance-driven. And if there were any penalties, it just went into general revenues of that department, Health and Human Services. Now the Office of Civil Rights actually gets to keep that money to use it for more enforcement. And of course, with high tech, it allows now state attorneys general to prosecute breaches, and they in the cash-strapped states will be able to look after that money to help support more enforcement errors or enforcement provisions. And then as well, victims, even potentially non-victims, can get into the game. Like in the law, we have False Claims Act, which is often referred to as KETOMS, when there's fraud in the government. Whoever blows the whistle on the fraud gets to collect. Well, now if somebody blows the whistle on breaches, including victims or people not even harmed by those breaches, but if they inform them of it and money is collected, they could possibly share in the recovery.
What about if patients email me? Am I responsible for protecting the information? Because I have a lot of patients that email me questions. They find my email somehow, and I just kind of respond back to that. Is that okay?
Well, it is, and that's a good question to raise. More and more now, with patients becoming more involved in their healthcare, and even larger institutions and doctors establishing communication and abilities for patients to input their information into a database, you have that increased communication. It is important from the physician standpoint to inform the patient in responding to email via probably a disclosure at the bottom that communications by email are not confidential. They are they're not secure. They need to understand that, because one thing as a physician, you have control over once the information hits your server, and it's a secure server, an encrypted server. Somebody can't go in and get that information. And even if you send something to a secure server or put information which the patient has to put in a password and a username to gather, then that's secure. But the problem is, once it leaves your secure server and goes to the patient, or the patient sends it, that's an unsecure pipeline. And patients need to understand that as that information is being transferred through that unsecured pipeline, if you will, it can be poached by somebody who's seeking to gather information floating in the clouds.
All right. And then I have those penalties come after me. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah. It's important to have, by all means, I've suggested to doctors to get a waiver, you know, because email is so proliferant. Because email is becoming more and more used, as well as even text messages, getting patients to sign a waiver even as they come into the office that if you wish to receive communication by email, sign this document that says, hey, by the way, this is unsecure. We will communicate with you, but you are waiving any HIPAA privacy protections that you have.
Switching topics a little bit, if a mobile application says that it is HIPAA compliant, but its security is breached, will I be held liable for that release of PHI?
Yeah, you understand that as the physician, you are always responsible for the security of the information. Certainly, it is incumbent upon the physicians or the physician group when deciding to go with technology for encryption and security to do their homework. Ask a lot of questions before you buy into something to make sure that it is compliant, because while they may provide you with some guarantee or some sort of a warranty, if you will, that this is, if there's a breach, they're not going to go to the company. You certainly could say if the safe harbor, you could claim the safe harbor, but ultimately if it didn't comply, it falls upon the physician, and then you as the physician are left to the extent that you've lost any money or had to pay out because of a breach or suffered any damages. You go back after the company for breaching some sort of agreement. But that's ultimately, though, the responsibility lies with the physician and the physician group.
Now, what should a dermatologist do if he or she loses his or her mobile device?
Well, The first thing to do is, if it's a short time, be able to try to find it if you can, if it's easy enough to search. Second of all, it would be important to inform partners, your physicians group or your office manager, however you have that denominated in your practice. And efforts need to be taken for recovery. They also need to be immediately taken to determine what patient information is on there. Hopefully, there is some sort of backup mechanism, whether in the cloud or other means to recover the data that may be on there, particularly with iPhones and the iCloud, as well as a lot of server capacities within practices. You could be able to recover what emails might be on there, what calendars. You can usually go on your own desktop and figure that out, because notice will need to be sent to the individuals whose security is compromised. The law says that it should be no more than 60 days from the date that you discover the breach, not 60 days from when you think a breach happened or whether it constituted a breach, the discovery of a potential breach. And then, of course, again, once you gather that information and understand was there protected health information on there, then you need to go through the steps of notice. If it's more than 500 individuals, media notice, and also informing the Department of Health and Human Services. Unless it's more than 500 folks, you only have to do that annually. Otherwise, if it's more than 500, you got to do it within 60 days, just like the individual notice.
How do you find out if you're at that threshold, 500 below or above?
Well, that's part of the investigation that you would have to do, and that would require certainly the doctor's time, probably a IT person to go through and search to see whose stuff was on there and calculate how many individuals were on there. It's incumbent upon on the physician and the practice group to figure that out. And that's why you want to avoid a breach in the first place, because the whole time that you're doing this, you're spending time away from your patients and caring for your patients. Not to mention the fact having to tell these same patients, oh, by the way, your information may be somewhere that I don't know where it's at.
And I understand that this PHI can just be their name and a telephone number. That might be enough.
It could be. Again, that's the one thing. Lawyers write these laws and make them ambiguous, and then we thrive in that ambiguity. That's how we stay in business. So, yes, the law says that if the information protected individually identifiable information, and if it's got a name and somebody's telephone number, that's individually identifiable. I know that is Mrs. Pam Smith and I've got her telephone number, but if that has the potential or the risk of causing her financial or reputational harm, whether or not it actually does cause her harm, then that's a breach. So that could be, in that situation, enough. Depend on the other circumstances, of course.
Thank you, Mr. Robertson. This was a great discussion. I learned a ton, and it's given me a whole lot to think about and some practices that I'll have to work on myself.
Thank you for having me.
The expanding arsenal of technological innovations in medicine and federal mandates to transition toward the electronic health record, or EHR, have given rise to new media and new norms for communication with patients, allowing patients to message their physicians at any time and physicians to access patient information and respond in seconds via applications or apps on their smartphones. These innovations bring with them new considerations and new questions with regard to protecting patient confidentiality in an era when patient information is mobile, accessible, and transferable with only a click. The shift toward telemedicine and mobile health has challenged the traditional idea of the doctor-patient visit. In Northern California alone, Kaiser Permanente estimated the number of virtual visits at 10.5 million in 2013 and predicted by 2016, virtual visits, including secure email, telephone, and video encounters, will exceed in-person visits in its Northern California system. Just as visits have become less tangible, medical documentation has also transitioned from dependence on a physical object, that is, a paper chart that could be physically moved, stored in a vault, and locked securely, to something that is virtually spaceless, mobile, and that can be in many places at the same time. Thus, this information can be much more easily accessed or stolen, and theft could be invisible. Unlike the team of burglars moving large containers of files required for such theft in the past, in this day and age, thousands of patient records could be breached in seconds and imperceptibly by a hacker anywhere in the world. Despite the absence of masked men, however, security breaches can still occur and most often happen by accident as a result of lack of knowledge and vigilance on the part of those in the healthcare field. Phones are lost, laptops containing private health information are stolen, new apps spring up daily, and healthcare providers begin using them unaware as to their degree of security or lack thereof. In 2013, over 140 separate HIPAA violations, potentially affecting an estimated 5.7 million affected individuals, were reported, and approximately 30% of the violations were due to theft or loss of an unencrypted laptop or portable device. No matter the source or the situation, the damages from a HIPAA violation may be extensive. The penalties for noncompliance are based on the level of negligence and can range from $100 to $50,000 per violation or per record, with a maximum penalty of $1.5 million per year for violations of an identical provision. The High Tech Act of 2009 delineated four levels of violations, reflecting increasing culpability, with corresponding increases in punishment. First-level violations involve breaches wherein reasonable precautions were in place and the violator was not aware of the breach. Second-level violations involve a reasonable cause but no willful neglect. Third-level violations involve willful neglect with timely correction. And fourth-level violations involve neglect without correction. A case could be made that lack of protection on a mobile device could constitute a third-level violation. The corresponding penalties may be imposed even if no apparent damages occur. Given that over 80% of physicians are using mobile devices and the growing bring-your-own-device culture being observed in which physicians demand to purchase their own medical apps and utilize their own mobile devices rather than use employer-provided devices with employer-specified apps, new challenges are beginning to be discovered and addressed at the patient, provider, and federal levels. Although major breaches involving mobile devices have not yet been reported, given that they are highly subject to theft or loss, one can presume a sentinel case is pending. In addition to physical theft of a physician's personal device, non-physician individual users, including clinic staff or business entities, can dictate where information is stored in a manner that providers cannot monitor nor control. Cloud storage is popular among mobile device users, and users storing personal health information in clouds may be putting the cloud provider at risk if a HIPAA business associate agreement is not signed. As in any security breach, whether it targets Target, Sony, eBay, or a doctor, victims feel vulnerable and distrustful. Given the intensely personal relationships between dermatologists and their patients, a negligent breach could irreversibly damage a provider's reputation. If adequate protections are in place in the event of a HIPAA breach, physicians may claim safe harbor and thus limit the responsibility for any consequences. There are several key steps physicians can take to minimize the risk. Physicians should develop policies and procedures outlining mobile device usage standards for their employees. Policies should state whether or not personal mobile device usage is allowed, and if so, the usage parameters should be clearly defined. Physicians need to be clear as to which party is responsible for security and encrypting the mobile devices. Once mobile device policies are in place, physicians should perform periodic audits to ensure that compliance is upheld. The best ways to protect mobile devices from breaches is to have them password protected and encrypt them in accordance with HIPAA's technical standards. Under the security rule, if a mobile device's encryption meets HIPAA standards and is lost or stolen, then there is no breach and the patients do not have to be notified. Another way to protect mobile devices is to install a remote wiping or disabling program into them. Apple's Find My iPhone and Android's Device Manager apps are examples of such programs and should be enabled on mobile devices. These programs allow users to quickly clear and disable a lost or stolen mobile device, which can possibly prevent or reduce the magnitude of breaches. Physicians and their staff should avoid using unknown Wi-Fi networks, as the security on these networks is highly variable. Password-protected networks listed with 802.xx security and passwords are generally safe. Mobile users should be careful to investigate whether apps they use are HIPAA-compliant, as the majority of health-related apps are not. Before recommending an app to patients, providers should first conduct a risk assessment of an app to determine whether or not HIPAA even applies to the app. One recommendation is that any app or cloud storage system that uses patient information have a Business Associate Agreement, or BAA, in place prior to use. This ensures that HIPAA compliance is maintained. Practical HIPAA-compliant tools include secure storage and sending systems like TrueVault, Citrix ShareFile, and Google Apps for Work, encrypting apps such as MiniLock, secure texting apps like HIPAChat, and installation of a VPN. Photos stored on a mobile device should be protected with a unique password. Notably, Apple iCloud is not HIPAA-compliant and should not be used. Finally, all mobile communications should have a subject title informing the recipient that personal health information is forthcoming. This avoids a situation in which patients open a sensitive document in the presence of others. I hope you enjoyed this edition of Dialogues in Dermatology. Next month, we'll have dialogues on a theme celebrating bench research, which will include bench to bedside, important clinical advances, tumor immunology, and melanoma markers. Remember to download the Dialogues in Dermatology app for your convenience. Also, we now have a presence on Facebook and would like you to join us online for previews, info, and fun. This has been Terry Cronin with Dialogues in Dermatology. Stay passionate about dermatology. Your expertise and hard work on behalf of your patients is appreciated and makes your colleagues and your community proud. Have a happy new year and another great month.